aspects that we track in terms of revenue. And I will say that the group do not include chargebacks. Chargebacks are basically invoices that are received, say, in 2020, but are actually for 2019 expenses. Mm-hmm. It can both be revenue or expenditures. So these numbers do not include those as yet. On off-street parking, we're currently at 132.5, which is slightly short of the 2019 budget and not inconsiderably less than the 2020 budget number. So I don't know how much, if any, chargebacks there will be on that account, but we will find out in the next month or two. Front Street Municipal Lot, we're at 253, which is slightly over the 2019 budget estimate. I know for sure there's going to be some chargebacks on that, at least 20 grand worth. So that number looks pretty good, and the 2020 budget looks pretty good as well. Parking and other permits came in at 45, which is a little bit above our budget, but less than what we have budgeted for 2020. So those will be numbers to keep an eye on. Ditto with parking tickets. We came in comfortably above the 2019 budget, but having seen those trends, we took that into consideration in the 2020 budget. So we shall see. For the people that are new on the committee, basically we have to have, it's a thing called the ABD, which is the annual update document. Have you seen that there? Okay. I'm going to do this way. How's that? And at that time, that's the point in time that we basically have all the financials finalized for the prior year. The goal is to have it completed by the end of March so that we can go through it with the accounts and make sure that all our ducks are in a row. So basically, what you can expect to see is an update on potential chargebacks and revised 2019 revenues for the next 2 months, February and March. So yeah. 2019, basically 2019, will keep changing until basically the end of March. And next month you'll see a resolution for encumbrances and other carryovers. And we'll talk about that in a minute when we get to the other side of this. But so that's basically the timeline that you can expect. Plumbing permits came in fine. Looks okay with terms of the 2020 budget as well. Building permits, we got a fair amount in the last couple months, so that's looking good, and if anything, 2020 might be a little understated, but if you look at 2018, it was only 92. It obviously fluctuates depending on, you know, who takes out building permits and how big projects, and we've had a couple pretty significant projects, you know, between the Maker and some other things. Not sure if there are any more of those on the horizon for 2020 or not. I don't know. Craig might know.
So all this that's above what we budgeted for, assuming all the chargeback and revenues by March, the excess all goes in the general fund, right?
Yes.
So we'll get a significant, if this trends like this, there'll be a...
Not necessarily. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Sales tax contribution, we're still at 1.3. We expect to receive the final fourth quarter check, which will be charged back sometime this month or early February. Mortgage taxes, we know, came in considerably under budget, and you can see that we took that into consideration for the 2020 estimate. Lodging tax, we're at 310 versus 280, and there are definitely more chargebacks coming with that, so that's a good thing.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Of course.
What do you mean chargeback?
So chargeback is, for example, I'll use lodging tax as an example, and you'll see on the next page that I refer to this more specifically, but lodging tax, the filing was due November 31st. However, we received late filings in, say, January, I think in January, but those are technically 2019 revenues.
On an accrual basis.
Yeah, it's basically an accrual basis, exactly right. So that happens both for revenues and for expenditures, because we'll get invoices, and I just saw one on this list today, which answers a question I was going to have. like for the JLE study, so we're paying that one this month. But it's a 2019 expense, so we'll get charged back against 2019. So foreclosures, we're on hold pending the change administration. We've got a meeting set up, I think, tomorrow to discuss that. Charging stations, this is actually a question for the council in general. Rich Bolo was managing that project, and I'm wondering who's going to be replacing him. I know the crosswalks or the charging stations aren't installed, but as far as I know, none of the paperwork has been done to get
really?
The money back. I mean, if it is, I will double check that tomorrow, but I don't recall anybody telling me that we've gotten, you know, the 26 grand
Interesting.
In money back. I will double check, though.
Have you seen any cars there yet?
Nope.
Neither have I.
So, is that paperwork something that, I mean, is there a staff person that does that kind of paperwork?
Nope. This was Rich's personal project, so he was managing all the aspects of it.
Okay.
I'll contact him.
Silver crosswalks, Alderman Moranti reached out to me, and we're going to set the time to talk about putting that resolution together, hopefully for next month. Water and sewer rates, there was an increase of $5 per quarter on residential rates included in the 2020 budget estimate. That is supposedly going from 105 to 110. It's the first time they've been increased in 12 years or something like that. And it's necessary at this time, not only because overall expenses are going up, but also we received a WIA grant and a WQIP grant, mm-hmm. both which have matches, and we don't have enough in sewer fund balance. I actually asked Cheryl Roberts if we actually needed a resolution to formally increase the rates, because technically since they're in the budget, they've been approved, but we both agree that there's no downside to doing one, just for pure clarity. Mm-hmm.
And I think once before, we did do an increase and put it all on the sewer, or the water side.
Right now, we're probably going to do four water and one the sewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sewer's got its, treatment revenue. But the other interesting thing that's going on in the other direction, though, is they get paid to treat the leachate, but then they have to pay to get the sludge taken away, and sludge rates have gone up like $20 a ton or something like that. So that's making it a little tighter. 2020 budget, you all approved that at the time, so we're aware of that.
I just have a little more question.
Mm-hmm.
So match grants. Do we apply for those, or those just are things that...
Nope, there's a whole process. They identify grants that they want to apply for.
Who's
that? Somebody in DPW, youth department, basically anybody that has an opportunity to potentially bring in money. Mayor's office has reached out on multiple occasions. Then a resolution authorizing that would come forward before the council to authorize the application, and then they'd also authorize accepting it and any financial match that would be required.
Are we still using grant writers?
We're in the process of selecting.
Another, or maybe them.
Maybe them and a couple others, yeah.
Okay.
Last year, there was a compensation committee created. It did a first round look at things. It basically became dormant, so I actually didn't bring this up with the mayor, but I just put it on here for guidance. If it's going to be reestablished, and if so, will it review or provide guidance to any proposed non-contractual increases? Okay.
For the 2020 year?
Mm-hmm.
For any time. I mean, as it is now, certain department heads get to make increases without having to account for it. So we're trying to get it an across-the-board way of deciding on increases.
Right.
You know, and as Heather's talked about it in the compensation board, it would mean sort of defining levels and skills and all that kind of thing. So you have something that someone can point to and say, I'm due for a 50-cent increase or something like that.
Right.
We have nothing like that.
Right.
Beyond, I mean, obviously, I was going to say, for the non-civil service.
Well, actually, for the non-union. Because Rob Perry's civil service, but he's not covered by the union contract.
Right.
It's also an attempt to try and get parity across departments, because different departments have treated their non-union employees very differently from each other, and that was costly issues. So the idea is to try and get consistency and have something you can point to and say, this is how it works. There shouldn't be really any questions or issues. Okay, so going to your question, Tom. Here is my 2019 projection first cut, and I have to tell everybody this is an estimate and an estimate only. Last year was the first time we attempted at all to try and figure out what the end of the year would look like before the accountants got to it. So as I walk through it, I'll try and explain in as much detail what it all means. Certainly feel free to ask questions, and I'll tell you like sort of what's a definite and what's a variable. So our original budget was $11.6 million, and for those of you that don't know, I'm trying to do a little bit of budget primer 101 here. Municipalities work on a balanced budget, which means your revenues and your expenditures are budgeted to match, because obviously we're not trying to make money, but ideally we're also trying not to lose money. So that's why anytime there's a budget amendment, it will increase some revenue and increase the corresponding expenditure budget. So through 2019, again, prior to chargebacks, we're showing revenues of $11.2 million, expenditures of $10.4 million, or revenues over expenditures of $760,000. Sounds great. We also have additional revenue that will be charged back that we're anticipating. Like I use this as an explanation. Taxes that we're receiving in this year that are for last quarter's taxes. There's also, because lodging tax filing runs on the same schedule as the New York State sales tax, the next filing, which is due in February, or March, sorry, will actually include 1 month of December. So we take whatever we get for that first quarter of 2020, and we'll charge a third of it back as revenue to 2019. Last year it was about $17,000. Sales tax, which we touched upon briefly, we don't get the fourth quarter sales tax until sometime early 2000, the following year. So I'm estimating that at about $460,000, could be higher. Probably won't be lower, but you know, we won't know until we know. As I said, I know we've got some chargebacks for Front Street Lot, so I've got an estimate for that. The next one is Providence Hall and Schuyler Court true-ups, because they pay. So we're in a pilot agreement with them, and they pay a flat rate every quarter. And then at the end, but their contract state has a formula for how it's calculated, and it's basically based on gross shelter rents. So until they finish their fiscal year and they figure out what that is, they don't really know how much they owe us. So either they do a true up at the end, and you know, if we pay them, you know, $20,000 in our regular payments, and it turns out they owe us $23,000, they send us a check for $23,000. If it turns out they only owed us $17,000, we would have to reimburse them. But it's been pretty steadily an increase. So that's good. That's, you know, $500,000 of additional revenue that'll be hitting 2019. But we also have some anticipated expenditure chargebacks. So we have payroll chargebacks of approximately $100,000. That's because the last payroll we did had, it depends on whether you're hourly or personal, but a portion of it was for 2019 and a portion of it was 2020. So that gets charged back to the respective payroll accounts. Obviously with payroll comes Social Security, so that will be it as well. The Tourism Board distribution, even though we're collecting all the revenue as it currently stands, half of that goes to the Tourism Board, so that has to be backed out. 2019 retirement, that is, we get an invoice from the New York State retirement system. We actually get two, one for the police and fire retirement system and one for basically the everybody else retirement system, because they're on yet another fiscal thing, which is from April 1st to March 31st. We have to charge back, so that basically almost $600,000 will be hitting 2019 for the 9 months that this bill that's being paid in January covers. And that happens every year. Other chargebacks?
There's a question from the audience.
Sure. Peter Frank.
In the chargebacks under the lodging tax,
mm-hmm.
delinquent, those are people, can you explain that? Is that money that's like guaranteed to come in, or is that money,
yes.
What do you mean by delinquent?
Delinquent. That represents money that we've received through people filing who filed for the fourth quarter but didn't pay until 2020.
Okay, so that's money we can bank on.
That's money that we can definitely bank on.
So on the other side of the page where it shows that already there was 310, so what we can anticipate for the lodging tax for last year is 310 plus 43 plus 20 or 373?
No.
Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
The 43 and the 20 are, well, the 43 is revenue that we've received in 2020, but should be reflected in 2019. So that gets charged back to the total expenditure line.
Okay.
The 20,000 is an estimate for what we will bring in for the next filing, because one third of that is actually 2019 revenue, because it's for December. People are filing for December, January, and February, and file in March.
So what's your best guess for what the lodging tax for 2019 actual will be?
Well, you're asking about the tourism board or the lodging tax?
The lodging tax.
It's about 310. It'll be probably 350, 60, 70, 370 or so.
Okay.
But if you're asking, because you're asking about the tourism board, that's what that expenditure is further down.
Yes, no, I understand.
Okay.
And will the resolution about the tourism board that's coming up later, will that affect that?
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
It won't.
Because it won't be.
It's for this year.
Right.
Yeah. And it will only be in effect from the point in time.
From the point in time it gets. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the one thing I would say is you really need to do it in a corresponding time with the filings, because otherwise it will be literally impossible to figure out when to charge and not charge. So, again, as a reminder, for example, this quarter is December, January, and February. They'll file in March. So if you want to make it as of, you know, March 1st, then we can go forward that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it really has to be the start of any one of the four filing quarters.
To make the accounting easier.
To make the accounting possible.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then, of course, there may be other chargebacks that I'm unaware of. I actually had on my list to ask you about the JLE study, because I noticed, that's going to be another $25,000 there. And there may be other ones from other departments that I'm unaware of.
Just back to what you were just saying, mm-hmm. You're saying that this resolution needs to be timed with the financial quarter.
The final quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So assuming you want to do this as soon as possible, it would be March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's roughly where we are today. You know, we have another at least $25,000 that's going to hit because of the JLE study, and I'm sure there's other expenditures that are out there that I'm unaware of because it's still pretty early in the year. So we started 2019 with unassigned fund balance of $3.273 million. And then if we take our net of when we take the revenues and add in the potential chargebacks, expenditures and potential chargebacks, it looks like we'd be up about $450,000, which would get us to $3.729 million. But then you have to subtract the amount that we used to balance the 2020 budget, because in 2019 that will be considered assigned appropriated fund balance. And then, and so that's an actual number. Obviously, the 455 is an estimate. The 353.9 is an actual. And the 348 is currently an estimate as well. And those are the encumbrances, donation carryovers, grant carryovers that all basically drop and then get put back into the budget through a budget amendment, which I'm hoping to get done in February. So when you net that all out, based on these very rough, very early assumptions, the potential unassigned fund balance would be about 3.0 million. Our 2020 budget is 11.945 million, which gives you a fund balance rate of 25.3%. Now, each, you know, $12,000 in revenue will increase it approximately 0.1 point, and each expenditure will drop it 0.1 point. So, for example, with $25,000 for Lacey, that's going to drop that 25.3 to 25.1, because it's two, you know, $25,000, which is 12 twice, basically.
And where did we set the low end of what we wanted it to be? We didn't want to fall below
25%.
It is 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And no higher than 35%.
Right.
Because that either should be put in reserve funds,
right,
or
tax relief,
exactly.
And like, what are the implications of the percentage? I mean, what does that mean? So it's unassigned, meaning it's literally not allocated to something?
Yeah, exactly right.
Okay. And it's meant to be kept unallocated, or it's like, this is...
It's meant to be kept unallocated. The council has passed a fund balance policy that says for this particular, this particular fund, you don't want it to drop past 25%, but you don't want it to be higher than 35%.
Mm-hmm.
So this just shows that, you know, based on this very rough initial estimate, we are right at the border.
Of a number we set.
Hmm?
Of a percentage that we established.
Yep.
It's not like it's
right.
An objective number. So we're at the border of our own border.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
And, you know, we'll look back into, like, 2007, 2008, 2009, Great Recession, one of the blistering things for municipalities was the pension systems still had to be funded at their assumed rate in order to meet pension, which was like 8% at the time. So the pension payments just came thundering in for a couple of years until the market settled and the fund began to grow. So that's just an example.
And what kind of numbers was the fund balance then? What was the percentage then?
Oh my gosh, Tom.
I mean, did it drop significantly below 25%?
I don't know that it would have been below 25%.
Yeah.
Budget was
2007, 2008,
yeah.
I think it was. But that was before the fund balance policy
sure.
was passed also.
Right. But that's just...
Mm-hmm.
That could happen.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. Actually, a quick question is, if we go below 25%, does that affect our credit rating? Can that affect our credit rating?
I mean, they obviously look at that.
Right.
They look at the financials.
Right.
And, you know, if, to the extent that they see it continuing to decline, that would definitely be an issue.
Okay.
You know, if it's 21 instead of 25%, is anybody going to completely freak out?
Is that 25% is that sufficient if there's an economic downturn and things?
Depends on how big
the
downturn is.
Yeah, how big the
downturn.
So there is that cushion.
Let me recommend there's a document online from New York State talking all about fund balances and where they should be.
Right.
So that'll guide you in terms of...
The state was always... reluctant to set a number for
correct.
Municipalities.
Yeah, they won't.
They won't do it because it
completely depends on your individual thing.
Right.
The Government Finance Officers Association has provided more guidance, which is at a very minimum 2 months, which is about 19%. But they emphasize that is a you know, like the bare minimum that they would even consider suggesting.
Do you find the state's evaluation of stress cities useful?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, we've been lucky enough that we've been doing okay. But I think, I think it's a useful metric to keep an eye on, because if we start, you know, that's another thing that could potentially be impacted. If they see a decrease in fund balance over time, that, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head how many points they give for that, because they look at like 10 different metrics. But I'm not overly concerned about us.
No, I thought we were in good shape with
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Heather. Moving right along. On the previous Finance Committee's agenda, which didn't seem to get done, is figuring out a fee schedule. So what I have, and what I'm working on, is some of the facts that Tracy assembled for us in terms of our...
I thought you meant parking and tickets.
It's everything.
The administrator.
Everything. This is everything. We're talking about dogs. We're talking about vendors. To give you an idea of the type of things on here. Mass gathering fees, which we don't have. Treasurer's office fees, which is mainly lodging tax fees.
The only thing that we have is
lodging tax registration fee.
Oh yeah, you're right. But then we also have a fee to enter into an installment agreement. But it gets rolled into their taxes.
Yes, you do.
So.
And that's $150.
An installment agreement is if somebody gets very far behind in their taxes, the city offers a 24-month payment plan, basically.
So then, of course, there are DPW fees, code enforcement fees. So I have Craig's schedules, but what I've done is I've found a comparable municipality, Watervliet, and right off the bat, I noticed most of their code enforcement fees and building fees are 1% of all projects, which is actually higher than what we charge, and we're a city that's, you know, has a lot of stuff going on. So that's definitely probably going to be included in our eventual fee reschedule. So I've taken this on. Just want to let you know that's one of the things, because we're not just about spending money, but we're also trying to find some revenue. So there might be something considerable there in the future. Secondly, we talked about, and I'm still trying to figure out what we need to do next, about a very minor fee raise, but could be considerable, and that is raising the parking meter fee. We've talked about this, and it's a quarter will in the future buy you 1 half hour rather than 1 full hour, and it'll only be on Warren Street because the idea is that it incentivizes people to park off Warren Street, and you know, which makes, I think, logical sense. And so that, as soon as I have all the documentation for what that costs, in terms of both the little stickers that have to be put on, we rent a device. Someone, I think, asked at one point, do you have to change all the meters? No, you don't have to physically change the meters. You have a device that will change the settings. And then, of course, you have to hire somebody to do that, presumably one of the parking meter attendants. And so we need to come up with a resolution by next meeting, and again, I'll work on that as well, to change the meters on Warren Street to 25 cents per half hour. And I think we figured that it could be I mean, it's not just a revenue raiser, it's also to incentivize people parking on Warren Street. Well, next, yes.
Along with thinking about the parking meters, this might be a very unpopular thing for me to say, but I've never understood why we didn't charge parking in December. I mean, I understand the reason why, but it seems to me that the parking meters are a tourist tax, and that's something we should be doing. And I can't believe that people aren't going to come to Hudson and shop in December.
I totally agree with you, and I told the last mayor this could be his going away present to Hudson to get rid of it, but I don't think he was willing to suffer the opprobrium of doing such a thing.
But I think
it's a terrible thing. I think it's a ridiculous thing.
Happened.
Because it doesn't actually work in terms of helping.
It doesn't support merchants, and it deprives the city of
I agree.
1 month of revenue.
And it's a lot of merchants just parking in front of their shop all the time.
Exactly. I saw it. I watched during December, and I saw that happen a lot.
Yeah.
And that's...
You're still paying for the parking.
It's done by...
And we have staff to collect. We paid staff to collect to meet our needs, so they're not...
What about the other parking?
It's a very popular, excuse me, you can imagine how popular that'll be when a mayor decides to do it, but it's totally up to the mayor.
I will support that. Go through that.
Yes, Eileen.
We have gone through and recommended some increased fees for double parking.
That's all on this list somewhere. And... I mean, the sort of stunning fact of this document that Tracy put together is that most of these fees go back to 2004, 2010, that's not so far back, but still, the DPW fees are, we don't know the exact dates, but it's over 10 years for all of them. And same thing for, let me see, code enforcement. Code enforcement last raised their fees in 2011. So, you know, it's not that recent to justify some more increases.
And the parking, it is dangerous and often impossible to get, if you're, you know, in a car, to get... up and down Warren Street, especially as you get closer, right. I don't know, to the river, the train station, you know, the closer
right.
you get. And it's, some of the cars are double parked and nobody's in them.
I know.
And I think those ought to be a big ticket item to get
it
rid
is, of it is a higher made. Ticket, but maybe it should be even higher. Crystal.
Here's two questions. In connection with the double parking, I've never seen him get a ticket for the same. I don't know if there's any way to
recommend
on that. Yeah, it happens all the time when you see cabs pull up to an empty spot and double park next to an empty spot. So I'm all about that. Second question, I guess that's more of a comment than a question, but my question would be, would you consider expanding the meter to 3 hours? Just gives people a time to get from one side of Warren to the other?
From one side of Warren to the other?
Up and down.
Oh. I don't know.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, because if the point of the December thing is to let people shop till they drop, that would be something they would want.
There might be a cost associated with that, which doesn't mean not to do it. But I think when it was changed, did it used to be 10 cents an hour or something? When it was changed to 25, there was some expense, but it certainly would be worth it, for whatever we increased it to.
Remember, it just only goes to 2, doesn't it?
Right,
We have to change that, and that's, yeah.
Aren't they like, they're programmed, right?
To a degree.
You have to change them anyway if you're changing the rate, right? You have to print out new metal tags.
Yeah, but that's nothing.
Yeah, but that's different.
That's different than creating a whole
new... If you replace an entire head, that would let you turn something to 3 hours. Right now they only go to 2. So the physical act of choosing 3 hours is not...
If it's a quarter cap, then you're looking at somebody might only be able to get an hour. So if somebody can only put in 2 quarters, if that's like the cap on this machine... If we go to 50 cents, then somebody's only going to get an hour. Mm-hmm. I would just look into the machines and what we can do with that. It's an hour per game.
I think Rob probably has some information about that because we priced out. To see what.
I'll contact
what
Rob.
What it would cost.
Because I'd like to get that done sooner than later. Mm-hmm. Did we actually budget? Did we actually budget in anticipation of a slight increase?
I remember us increasing the revenue. I'm not sure I remember us setting aside expenditure for it.
Right. I mean, okay.
Yeah, I think we hope to do it in December.
Okay. Any other? And lastly, Our last item is a resolution that's coming forth tonight for an increase in the youth department budget. It's not the identical resolution as last week, which was for, I believe, upwards of $70,000. That's roughly half of that. Nick, did you want to speak to that before we discuss it, or?
Yeah, I mean, this was something that was proposed by the BEA, though, in terms by the Common Council's office and the mayor in an offer to split the cost into two, one portion being paid now and the second portion after we've seen what the revenues coming in from 2019 are at the end of, I guess it would be the end of March, and then look to see if we have available funds to fund the second half.
Well, one of part of it is lifeguard money, which of course can be can wait till the summer, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Eileen.
As I said at the council meeting the other night, I think it's an awful precedent to set. I think it just flies in the face of all the budget work that goes on for, you all know, how many months. And then if every department that doesn't get what they want in their budget comes back in January, I think it's a bad precedent to set. And I think any increase for the youth department over and above a substantial set of figures for payroll, there's big money in that budget for that. I think it has to be tied to reports, to data about on average for a month, how many children, what time of day, what happens, youth who are 18 and over. There's data that we need, and it's my understanding that there were funds allocated a couple of years back in order to have kids sign in and out, a safety measure in that you'd know whether the child was there or not if someone called. But I think it's a bad precedent to set, and I think we should have 6 months of data in preparation for allocating any more money to demonstrate the need.
My understanding is that the need has been demonstrated many times and that the youth department is underfunded and that in fact the funds that should be available to its operating costs are withheld routinely or are placed in the contingency budget or something.
No, that doesn't, the contingency doesn't bounce in and out. I'm sorry.
So, I mean, I feel like it's an important precedent to set that the city budget support its youth department appropriately and not require, I don't know, what's that word that means, above and beyond and painful, labor to demonstrate the need for the ability to pay its staff and things like that.
To that point, you're chair of the finance now. Mm-hmm. You were on the BEA that passed this budget, and every increase we do, we reach right in the taxpayers' pocket. That gets passed on to renters. That's a discouraging bit of business for growth here. I think if we were to look at the trend over the last several years, and I just didn't have time to do it today, the budget is very much higher than it has been.
Yeah,
we can always spend more, but
right. The problem with looking at the trend is that I'm not sure if you're aware that it was almost decimated at one point. So it's taken a long time to bring it up to a reasonable amount of funding. I also want, you know, I keep going back to the charter, and what it is the charter tells us is the duty of the youth department. Because everybody keeps telling me, you know, it's operated like it's a some kind of welfare program. Well, guess what? Well, yeah. Actually, you're right. I mean, I'm not quoting you. You suggested it was a, I forget what, I'm not going to quote you. Sorry, that wasn't meant to be about you. But this is what one hears. The fact is, if you read the charter, the youth department is devoted in whole or in part, and I'm quoting now, to the welfare and protection of youth within the city of Hudson, and to undertake and promote activities and establish, maintain, and operate projects devoted in whole or in part to providing leisure time activities for youth or assistance to children. I mean, yes, that is a social service, without a doubt, and it's, in a way, our only social service, but it is mandated by the charter. So despite recommendations that have become privatized and other ideas,
fundraise,
right, that seem improbable at best, I would like to see it, you know, with this small increase.
Then why didn't you do it in the budget? Why?
Because I was only I'm only one of three.
The precedent that, don't worry about it. You don't get it in the budget. Just come back in January. And if the need, you know, if the shortfall won't be until June, and all those things that you described in the charter, I don't think of it as welfare. I think it reflects a time when civic leaders felt an obligation towards, you know, towards young people. I think that's a good.
Are you suggesting we don't think that anymore?
No. Oh,
okay.
I'm saying. I'm saying it's probably longstanding words, and I think it's appropriate to be in the charter, and mm-hmm. I think we do the best as a city mm-hmm. that we can to live up to that. But I just don't see us putting that much more money in for this year without some data that shows how well are we meeting the words in that charter. How many kids are we serving on an average day? What are the peak times?
Nick?
You should definitely come to the youth committee meetings, because we present that information at every youth committee meeting. And, for example, the mayor had requested data for the past 2 years, and depending on what data he wanted at a particular point, the check-in system, which you mentioned, which was budgeted, paid for, mm-hmm. we implemented and is now our main check-in system mm-hmm. and is in full service, can provide any information that people want. And we provide that to people on a regular basis for a variety of reasons.
And that's where my thinking is, a regular set of reports. So
we
know
do that every month to the youth committee.
Right. Well, you'll be happy to know I'm on the youth committee now.
Perfect.
So I just have a question. I mean,
yeah.
On average, since you have this data, how many children are we serving?
On a given night, depending on the time of the year, right now we're in our busy season, in the early fall or late spring, it's less. We serve between 50 and 80 youth on average.
Are those all children from Hudson?
Mostly children from Hudson, but there are children who live in surrounding communities.
How many?
I can give you exact figures, but I would say less than 5% probably.
And those are all under 18?
All under 18? What are your...
Well, I mean, 18-year-olds hanging out with 14-year-olds seems like a possible lawsuit later and a liability for the city.
They have 21 years.
Dominic, did you want to...
Well, no, it was reported on the youth committee, right, Nick, that you also have 21-year-olds in mixing with 13 or 14-year-olds at times, right?
There could be 21-year-olds, yeah.
Oh, also, when you said about the reporting, when I asked for some reporting in regards to certain ages and times, because technically, you said that certain ages are supposed to leave at a certain time, right? three to six, how many X amount of age, how many X amount, you said that's impossible for you to do, or you said that was a lot of work?
We can provide breakdowns of any individual hour at the youth center by age. We can do anything like that. I believe your request wasn't possible for a different reason. I can't remember why, but we can break down by age. But I guess this is exactly what typically happens in the youth department thing. We're supposed to be talking about the youth department finances, and we get off into the weeds of people attacking all these different things. If they've heard about the youth department, they're going, this has nothing to do with finances, whether 18-year-olds or 21-year-olds can come in. And it's this way that we talk about the youth department, it's this way that we attack the youth department that doesn't happen with any other city budget. And I'm happy to continue to answer questions, but at a certain point, it's also ridiculous.
Kamal was next.
I want to address a few things. First thing I want to address is the age disparity. Lots of youth programs range from 14 to 24, including the Railroad Street Youth Project in Great Barrington, which is one of the best youth organizations, that I've ever seen. So that's not something that's, out of this world. When you hear 14, 21, it sounds on an offset, it's a bad thing. It's perfectly normal in youth organizations. For me, I cut this resolution in half just so we can get that data that you're asking for. With me at the helm and having a youth background, what I really want to see is a high quality youth organization. So I don't think it sets a bad precedent for this to happen in January. I think that it's a compromise to say, there are things that we want to see, there are improvements, there's progress that's happened already. But also, I think that a time for us to be debating about the youth program has ended, and we should look into now seeing results and adequately funding the youth center based on results as well.
Thank you. Crystal, you're next.
I just want to say, Nick, I understand your frustration, but I think it's well within all the taxpayers' interest to understand how we're financing different programs, and if you feel it's attacking, I'm sorry. But I think a lot of us are just trying to get to the root of how so much money is being spent and so much money is being asked for year after year at substantial increases.
Once again.
Let me finish.
I thought you were finished.
Clearly you're in support of this, and that's fine, but there are plenty of us that are concerned about the way our money is being spent, and we're all just trying to convey.
I understand that. I understand that.
I would just ask everybody to be respectful.
I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
I'm not finished. I think that the public would probably be a little more willing to buy in if we knew a little bit more about what the goals and the milestones of these programs were, the participation, where the actual money is being spent. It seems like we come back a lot and ask for money, but there's never a lot of answers for people, and I think that we're all just looking for answers. And I agree with Eileen. I think this is not the time to look for money. We've just had a budget passed, and each of the departments has to live within the budgets that they were given.
Peter, what's next?
I just want to echo what Nick said, that if any member of the public wants to come to the monthly public youth committee meetings, those conversations about those goals and milestones are what's discussed at every meeting. And that information is available.
It would be helpful if it was available online somewhere, that's all I'm saying.
It is.
Whoa.
It's available at the youth committee notes and the Common Council webpage. And
trying to comb through that to find something. It's if you had your own page on the City of Hudson's website,
we do.
That would be fantastic.
We do.
You put all of this information in there.
I've been to all of the different department meetings, and I can say confidently, and I don't boast about myself too much, but I think I give probably the most robust kind of updates every month to my committee than anybody that I've seen in the years that I've been involved with city government. The detail, we go over questions of finance, we go over questions of programs. They're often 2-hour meetings. We're going on about things. The public's asking questions. They're very transparent.
Participation numbers are always part of that.
Kamala, you're next.
Yeah, I want to add also that a lot of the various other youth organizations in the city serve in comparison with way fewer numbers than the youth department, but have higher budgets. So like there's Perfect 10, Promised Neighborhood, Kite's Nest. They all cannot handle the numbers that the youth department serves, and they have higher budgets or, in comparison, equal budgets as the youth center.
Thank you. Crystal.
Does that, I mean, has anybody investigated a not-for-profit scenario for this? I mean, it seems
yes.
as though there's a lot of money available. I think Hudson has a super compelling story.
And that's where the data comes in. Data, facts are our friends, you know? I feel like it'll demonstrate all the things that you're saying. But to just put it in a picture, put the data in and let people know.
I mean, I think as Tom's pointed out, the charter mandates specific language about how we handle the youth department. And I think what you're saying, if we look at this welfare or the program at the city, unless we have to meet the obligations that exist in the wording of the charter, and either we're calling it competent or incompetent, I think we'd be rather competent. I think that the demands on the youth department in terms of seasonal employee hires and those things are unique to the youth department vis-a-vis the other departments.
Amanda, I'm sorry. There was a question.
Yeah. Is there a way to do a kind of, I don't know if odd is the best word, but a way mm-hmm. to sort of, that could be kind of expensive, but someone who can independently look at everything because the debate is so charged one way or the other? Is that asking too much?
It is in the sense that we'd have to pay for it, and I'd like to see that done with every department in the city, but.
Yeah.
Is available, the reporting is done, it's on the website, go look at it.
And on that note, I think we'll just, one more last thing.
In terms of this current, and Nick, you said that the current request doesn't include the lifeguards request?
Well, yeah, that was part of that half mm-hmm. that I cut.
Because I think in terms of preparation, because I do agree with you that the lifeguards' salaries need to be increased, there needs to be a policy in place for training and recruiting lifeguards for longevity. So I think now, because it gives you X amount of months to do that, I think preparing for the summer for the lifeguard, because we know where that was last year. That was one of the biggest issues of the camp and the summer was the lifeguards. So reinvesting and taking that money in saying this is what we do, X, Y, and the lifeguards, I agree with that plan. Because I know the deficits, I know the trends, I know where the lifeguards are so difficult, and you compete with Lake Conn, compete with others that the number, for example, if you only serve 30 hours a week for lifeguards, well, they can get 40 or 50, 60s on other places. So I do agree that plan should be really concentrated and put into place. That's where the numbers, that's where I agree with your numbers are. And that's where I agree where your training proposition policy, that how are you put in place if you sponsor them and they come back, they commit for 2 years to the city, that's when I agree with that. And I think this is the time to think of that issue and moving that, forward.
Tom, before you...
Oh, sorry.
I believe there's a stipulation in the charter that says the city has to provide some sort of youth facility.
Right.
No matter what happens, if it goes for not-for-profit, the city has to provide.
Correct. Rebecca, I'm sorry, not Rebecca. I'd like to entertain a motion to advance this to tonight's meeting.
I will second that.
No, you got to give the motion.
Oh, second. I give the motion to advance.
A second? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Anything else the public would like to know? Before we... Peter.
Yeah, about a year ago in this committee, there was talk about doing an analysis of how much events like Flag Day cost the city. Have you worked on that?
There is, but that's why I took this whole fee scheduling project on because it didn't seem to advance as far as I'd hoped.
Okay.
But they're definitely
so investigating like the cost and overtime of yep. Police and DPW
yep.
was going to be part of that analysis.
Yeah, there is some of that. There's some of that out there. I'll check the minutes of the previous finance because I know some of it was done right, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come up with a fee schedule, even if we just come up with something minimal, because we don't we have nothing right now for meetings. I mean, for public meetings.
I mean, I have no idea if the
we don't even have an application fee.
Funding is going to go forward this year or not, or how that's going to work.
Which funding?
The $20,000 for city events.
Oh,
it should be. I think how much the city funds events anyway should be considered as part of that. As part of how that money is spent. You know, some events are much more costly to the city than others.
I've got lost in what you're saying about the money.
I don't know if there's going to be that $20,000 for city event money this year or not. But
right.
If there is, I think one of the considerations should be when the city looks at allocating money, is the city should consider how many thousands of dollars of overtime DPW and overtime police money is already going into supporting these events. Before they consider how much additional money.
I think that, is that on the final report? Don't they have to report in kind?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. People who get money at the end of the year, and I believe everybody submitted
their reports.
They have to say what the attendance was. It's the other half of what it costs the city. What's the benefit to the city?
Like the report from Flag Day doesn't include any information about how many overtime HPD hours.
Right, and that's the piece that has to be filled in, and that was
agree.
Part
and
of
by the way, I think we're going to find that $20,000 again from the tourism board, but at this point, who knows? Because the tourism board hasn't been filled yet.
And if that happens or not, I just still think it's dangerous.
Yeah, it's essential. I mean, just because, because we're giving in kind a lot to these events.
Yeah.
Especially Flag Day, especially other, days that require a lot of police activity, cleanup activity.
And, I'm all in favor of these events. I love them.
Yeah,
I'm not suggesting you don't do them. I just think
absolutely.
It's nice to know how much they cost.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Crystal.
Just as a follow-up, because I'm trying to access it on my phone, but the documents and services on the youth department page on the website are active. They just bring you back to the same page.
Okay, thank you.
You'll find all the minute notes in the Common Council Youth Committee. We do have a website, but we don't have the meeting notes from the youth committee. I don't think any department does that. They're already up there.
Okay. There's some information on the services even put empty.
If there's a broken link, then there's a broken link on the website, but
can I have a motion to
end
the meeting? Adjourn?
City website.
John, second the motion? All in favor of adjourning, say aye.
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 I'd like to stay for another half hour, so choose some more of this.
Okay, let me take us off the air. Don't say anything yet.
Okay.